passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today it's Sunday, January 16th, 2022. We have many revelations to make today, many things to reveal, many announcements to make. But first, I'm joined from my immediate south, advanced placement history student, number one Bills fan, Chris Cole. Hello.
It's great to be here, and we will talk a little history in today's episode. We have a huge show. It's going to be one subject, but we're going to go from a lot of angles. We're going to break down the lawsuit that MLW filed against WWE, but we're going to break down all the aspects of it, who's involved, timeline details, and much more on this Sunday morning edition here, if you're watching us on YouTube, yes, of WrestleNomics Radio.
We're going to take the New York Times, the daily approach today, and try to focus on one subject and go as in-depth as possible. So I guess that unfortunately means that we won't be talking about self-mutilation today. As the Toronto Star published an article with a statement from WWE referring to the December 31st Rampage episode containing the match, Tay Conti and... Anna Jay, no, yes, Anna Jay versus the
Bunny. It was a tag matchup.
And Penelope Ford match where they bled quite a bit. Self-mutilation. Anyway, we have things to reveal. I've joined the men's hair club. My head is now shaved. So there's that. This is, I'm starting to, age has many indignities, and I'm starting to suffer them. So we'll see how this goes. I did have my head shaved in, March. Was it March? Well, it was early in the pandemic. Nobody really saw that then, so I figured might as well. But then I decided to grow my hair back. But now, I don't know, I'm getting older, so I'm trying this again. We'll see how it goes. But also, we have a big announcement in the world of WrestleNomics, is that we have, you'll notice if you're watching on YouTube, Chris Gull is not wearing his usual bow tie. Usually he's the Tucker Carlson. But Tucker Carlson doesn't wear the bow tie anymore, but longtime CNN viewers will remember the days when Tucker Carlson used to wear a bow tie. Not on Fox News, on CNN. But anyway, he is wearing...
That's the only thing I have in common with Tucker Carlson.
Anyway, what are you wearing today, Chris Gall?
I am wearing the brand new WrestleNomics t-shirt, as you see here.
Wow.
In this wonderful gray design, but it also comes in a white t-shirt.
It does.
As well.
It does. That looks fabulous on you. I'm going to momentarily undo this. I have the white version. I'm going to reveal this like Superman here, like Clark Kent and Superman. We have t-shirts that are now on, I don't know if we can see it here. There's the white version now on store.postwrestling.com, where you can get not just that, but mugs too. You get t-shirts, the white or the gray, whatever size. You get the mugs, which we have here, the mugs. Yep. The logo on the front, the W WrestleNomics logo. Our version has it, the version that customers will get will be even better. We've enhanced the outline relative to the ones that we're actually holding. But on the other side, on the back side, the information that everyone wants to have handy every morning when they enjoy their coffee or whatever beverage it is that you choose to drink out of this is the U.S. TV rights agreement timeline. Now, finally, I know it's been a problem for people across the country and across the world, that they haven't had a handy reminder, quick reference, if you will, of what is the US TV rights timeline for WWE Raw, for WWE SmackDown, for AEW Dynamite. This is the most important piece of information, really, in all of the wrestling world. The biggest deals in all of the wrestling industry are, of course, the US TV rights deals. And this mug will show you when those deals expire, the US TV rights timeline for Raw, SmackDown, AEW Dynamite. Right there, I'll show it to the camera here. This is mine. Golo has it as well. So
yes,
you can get those on the Post Wrestling Store. Where's the URL? Store.postwrestling.com. Right now, I believe. They were scheduled to be available at 11 a.m. Eastern. It is now 11:07 a.m. Eastern. So those should be available to order at this very minute, if you're listening to us live. And of course, if you're listening to us after, you can also get all of your other post-wrestling merchandise, including hats and beanies and dad hats and pom-pom. How do you say this word, Go? Toque? Toque?
A toque.
Toque. Toque.
Yes, toques.
Yes. Yes, lots of other post-wrestling merchandise now, as well as WrestleMomics t-shirts and WrestleMomics mugs. So we are very excited to announce that. And big thanks to Post Wrestling, especially to Wei, for helping me set that up. So without any further ado, got my tie back on. I'm back in business here. What do you want to talk about today?
Well, we're going to talk about the lawsuit that was filed this week between MLW Media and World Wrestling Entertainment.
Yes. So this came out on Tuesday. I got an email alert through my Scoops alert, which is some sort of, I forget exactly what it is or how I set it up, but I get an email when there's a World Wrestling, you know, search term, a new case with World Wrestling in it. So I have this complaint. We'd heard that there was alleged interference between there was an MLW and Tubi deal, apparently, which allegedly WWE interfered with. I mean, this is something that Sean Ross Sapp reported on. I don't think all the parties were named in Sean Ross Sapp's original report on the issue, but I had heard through the grapevine that this was MLW, Tubi, and WWE. So it wasn't a huge surprise that this litigation did come out and this lawsuit was filed. But I had to start quickly reading this 20-page complaint. And I wanted to make sure I was, reading it and understanding it before reporting on it or anything like that. And then MLW Public Relations got in touch with me. We were given a press release that was embargoed until 9 a.m. the following day. But then Reuters just reported it. MLW PR didn't get in touch with Reuters. So the story broke on Tuesday night. I've written a summary of the complaint that you can find at patreon.com/WrestleNomics, sort of explaining the complaint in plain English. What does it say? What are the allegations here? We're going to talk through it as well today. So
we'll get right into it here. Plaintiff MLW Media filed for its complaint against defendant World Wrestling Entertainment. Number one, the action arises out of egregious efforts of professional wrestling company WWE to destroy its competitor MLW's business and maintain its dominance for the U.S. broadcasting market for professional wrestling by unlawfully interfering with MLW's access to media markets and wrestling talent. Number two, MLW, a professional wrestling company that generates cutting-edge professional wrestling content and sells broadcasting rights to that content, competes with other wrestling companies, including WWE, through locating and signing up-and-coming wrestling talent, promoting and selling tickets for live events, and broadcasting and licensing wrestling programs. And number three, WWE has dominated the U.S. market for wrestling broadcast content to the tune of 85% of the market since 2001, when it acquired its biggest competitor, World Championship Wrestling, maintaining its dominance through unfair and anti-competitive business practices, including poaching talent, misappropriating confidential information, interfering with competitors' contracts, and cutting off competitors' access to viewing audiences. So they're definitely tying in some previous stories there as well.
Yes. So there's a number of things that they're alleging here. Part of what they have to allege, we'll get into, is that they have to allege that because it's an antitrust lawsuit, they have to allege that WWE has market power, which I believe is similar to monopoly power. We'll get into more of that. So we talk about the Sherman Act and things of that nature. But we have highlighted here, WWE has control of 85% of the pro wrestling market. Does that sound right to you, Chris Gullo?
Not in today's world. And what market are we talking about? You know what I mean? Are we talking about globally or are we talking domestically? But I mean, pre-AEW, there could be an argument for that.
Yes. So what I have here is for the full year of 2021, I have Google web search for 17 pro wrestling companies. Obviously, not every pro wrestling company in the world. There's hundreds, if not thousands, of those, everything from small to big. But these are all the pro wrestling companies that are, I would say, highly recognizable to people who are listening to this program. And it's so for the last year, everybody's monthly average together, and it's 78% WWE. That's not revenue. That's not any other form of actual business. It's just web search. But I think web search is a place to start. It may inform what the market share is if in lieu of any other metrics. Revenue would be ideal. And we got Major League Wrestling. So 78% for WWE of the web search in 2021 out of 17 pro wrestling companies. About 12% for AEW. That leaves 5% for New Japan. This is worldwide, by the way. And then 5% for all the others that I just arbitrarily selected, including Impact, Ring of Honor. I remember I put NWA in here, AAA, CMLL, several others, Stardom, Japanese wrestling companies, NOAH, and so forth. All Japan is in here. Yes, Dragon Gate, DDT. But MLW here out of this pie is taking about 0.25% of the web search. To give you an idea of how big MLW is relative to the total, maybe it's the total wrestling industry, but at least the total search activity, perhaps. So, but that's web search. That's not really business. What about revenue? So I just did a rough estimate yesterday and figured, well, let's roughly estimate how much revenue is being made. This could be debated, but WWE is making about $1.1 billion in 2021. We'll know for sure in a few weeks when they report, I believe on February 3rd. I think it's going to be about $1.1 billion. A lot of stock analysts are estimating similar. And we already know what the first three quarters are. Anyway, AEW, I put at about $85 million on the year. New Japan, we have Bushiroad reports that put the sports division at, I think it's $35, $40 million. So $30 million, let's say, for New Japan. And then I put Stardom in here. I don't know that Stardom is the fourth highest revenue generator, but because Stardom is included in that sports division, I can say maybe about $5 million for Stardom. And then to do the other section, I said, well, there's, you know, I did a quick look at Cage Match. Cage Match, not a complete record, but Cage Match, a big piece of the wrestling events that have happened in the year have been recorded on Cage Match. I said, let's go about 10,000. There's less than 10,000 Cage Match, but I said about 10,000 global events. Let's multiply that by, let's say, 350 paid attendance is the average attendance. We could debate on whether that's aggressive or conservative. But let's say average ticket price is $35. So that would be substantially lower than the average WWE or AEW ticket price, which is about $55. And we get to 10,000 times 350 times 35 is $125 million. That's live event revenue that doesn't belong to these other four companies. And then I said, well, let's look at the YouTube revenue that might be being generated by all of these wrestling companies that are not those four companies. And I said, let's say about 2.2 billion views. I think I was looking at some Social Blade data. Let's say 2.2 billion views with an RPM of $1.10. That's $2.5 million in addition to the live event revenue. And let's say just the total sum of all the other media deals and consumer products sales and licensing sales is another 25 million. This is highly speculative, but that gets me to 150 million outside of WAW, New Japan, and Stardom. That brings the total rough estimate. You could debate a lot about this, but the rough estimate to about $1.4 billion for the total pro wrestling industry in 2021. And $1.4 billion is just under 80%. I believe it's 78% or something like that. So that's, and what have they got in the complaint here? 85% might be a little high. It's not like egregiously off though. So.
Yeah, we'll talk about number four now in the lawsuit with the popularity of WWE's program.
Just real quick, these numbers are just, we'll see a lot of these numbers repeated. They're just paragraph numbers, as people may know who have read lawsuits. It won't be important to name the paragraphs because we're going to be jumping all over just for the sake of a clear narrative. So go ahead.
So yeah, number four claim here, with the popularity of WWE's program declining over the last 5 years due to, among other things, inferior content, WWE targeted MLW with an unlawful predatory conduct, including airing without authority MLW wrestling footage, inducing MLW wrestlers under exclusive contracts with MLW to terminate those contracts, and encouraging MLW wrestlers to breach their contracts with MLW by disclosing MLW's confidential and proprietary business information.
Yes. So we'll get more into some of those details. There's allegations that WWE interfered with one of their talent. They poached talent and compelled one of their talent to expose proprietary information that belongs to MLW. What I want to focus on for now, though, is this very first sentence. With the popularity of WWE's programs declining over the last 5 years due to, among other things, inferior content. The case that they're building here is that, along the lines of antitrust, I think, is that, look, this product, WWE is dominating the market. Their product is declining in quality, and they're charging people the same amount or whatever. So it's bad for the consumer, I think, is sort of the conclusion that you draw, or the reason why the Sherman Act exists. But anyway, with the popularity of WWE's programs declining over the last 5 years, would you agree with that, Chris Gullo? Is that a true, accurate statement?
I would. I mean, if you look at ratings, I would say absolutely.
Ratings. You anti-WWE shill.
But that goes for everything. You look at the ratings.
All TV is down.
Blue Bloods.
All TV is down.
Yeah.
What about, are there any other metrics that we could point to say, hey, maybe even TV aside, that they have also been down on an annual basis for a number of years, at least before the pandemic?
Live attendance.
Oh, can you think of any publication that has made this a point of emphasis on a number of occasions? I've liked to trot out this series of charts that shows in 2 years, in 2019 and 2020, Raw declined worse than the rate of the top 50 non-news cable programs. That W Network, that is in 2019 and 2020. I think I just said that. W Network subscribers stagnated and actually fell after 2019. To 2019 and then stagnated thereafter, whereas I think you should have expected streaming subscriptions, a growing form of media, to otherwise grow. That besides, let's say you don't want to believe TV ratings, you don't want to believe, WWE Network subs. Hey, they didn't go down that badly. Well, we could point to merchandise. We throw away the year of 2020 because that was, heavily affected by the pandemic. But from 2017 to 2018 to 2019, venue merchandise went down due to lower attendance. Talk about that in a second. But yeah, also e-commerce sales of merchandise also declined during those years. product licensing revenue declined from 2017 to 2018 to 2019 and also 2020. Maybe there's a pandemic effect there, but there's not a pandemic effect from 2017, 2018, 2019. Attendance, ticket sales went down from 2017 to 2018 to 2019. Of course, they went down in 2020. And that's worldwide attendance. And that's both average attendance and total attendance went down in 2017, 2018, 2019. And then we can look at Google web search. That's just been down on a consistent decline for WWE since 2016. So, yes, I've often made the point that WWE's popularity has declined quite a bit in the last 5 years or so. So I would agree with that premise. So now what this lawsuit focuses on, other than the antitrust aspect, is it alleges that WWE interfered with a number of MLW media deals, most importantly, the Tubi deal. So there's allegations about WWE's alleged interference with the MLW deal with Tubi, with Vice TV, and even with Fight, the streaming pay-per-view provider, Fight. So we will discuss those things, but we're going to discuss WWE's market power as well. So I don't know why I put those logos there, but anyway, let's talk about market power.
Yeah, well, let's talk about market power here. WWE's estimated annual total revenue for 2020 in North America was over $764 million. By contrast, AEW's estimated revenue was $64 million, less than 10% of WWE's. Number 22 in the suit, the combined average annual value of WWE's US TV rates for its programs, WWE Raw and WWE SmackDown alone, is $470 million. By contrast, the average annual value of AEW's US TV rates for its most popular program, Dynamite, is just $43.8 million. Number 23 here, WWE SmackDown, WWE Raw, and WWE NXT together average over 4.7 million US television viewers per episode in 2020, with an average ratings in the important 18 to 49 demographic of 0.575, 0.5075, and 0.206, respectively. By contrast, AEW Dynamite's average 810,755 U.S. television viewers per episode in 2020, with an average rating of 0.344 in the 18 to 49 year demographic, and Impact averaged 154,038 U.S. television viewers per episode in 2020, with an average rating of 0.03 in that demographic.
Yes. So let's run through a fact check here. AEW's estimate, so the revenue of 2020 in North America was over $764 million. That sounds about right. I don't know if that's in their filings. I don't know that they actually break it down by region anymore, but they made just under $1 billion. I believe it's $974 million in 2020. AEW's estimated revenue was $64 million. Is that accurate?
In 2020? I don't know.
Has anybody reported that?
Not that I know of.
Let's see. Let's see if I can find any reporting to back that up here. Let's see here. If I go to the WrestleNomics industry report and I scroll and scroll to the, I think it's in here, the finances section. Let's see. Company finances. And there we have AEW, $64 million is what I estimated for 2020. So, yes, I think there's some WrestleNomics being relied on here for this complaint. So the $470 million for Raw and SmackDown, $43.8 million for AEW Dynamite. Those are, I don't know if I would phrase it AEW Dynamite at this point because Rampage is not included in that. Who knows when this was written, but those are, I think, well-established public facts. The 4.7 million dollars across Raw, SmackDown, NXT. That's all. I would agree with that. I checked the spreadsheet, and then we've got these demos. They line up close enough. The Impact numbers too, I think, are being. I think there's WrestleNomics being cited here too, because I don't know that those are being reported anywhere else for the Impact doing, you know, averaging 154,000 viewers and a 0.03 in the demo. So So there's that. There are no footnotes here saying where this information was gotten from, but maybe in the future there will be. We'll see. But anyway, so that all sounds about right. Again, this is part of MLW having to make the argument that WWE has market power, or monopoly power.
All right. We did get a couple super chats here. Back to the antitrust, Tim B, thank you for your super chat. He asked, correct if wrong, but antitrust lawsuits are aeromonically three times the damages by law.
I would have to ask. I've been in touch with three different lawyers and then just showed them the complaint and got some thoughts. That was not mentioned, but I will check on that. Thank you, Tim.
And since we're on this topic of programming, RT Machine gave a super chat and asked, do you guys watch WWE weekly programs like Raw, NXT, SmackDown? And also, do you guys watch Impact Wrestling? I can say for myself, I don't watch weekly. A lot of times I will catch up on my content on YouTube. Mm-hmm. I'll see what happened. What did I miss?
I put it on sometimes. I will put on Raw on mute sometimes. Not every week. Some weeks, yeah. NXT and SmackDown, similar. I will put on Dynamite and Rampage and usually watch more of those than, especially without the mute, without mute on. So thank you for the super chat.
By the way, you guys are great on YouTube. Lots of conversation happening between the listeners too. So very busy morning here at WrestleNomics.
Cool. So Tubi, we'll talk about Tubi next and what exactly MLW alleges happened between itself, Tubi, and WWE. Tubi, what is Tubi, Chris Gull? It's one of your favorite streaming services, I know. So tell us all about it.
So Tubi is a streaming service. For the most part, it's a lot of older TV shows and movies. But it was recently acquired by Fox. And there's ads. So like, you know, if you watch like an old pro, like, use for example, Santa with Muscles is on there. Mm. So if you watch Santa with Muscles,
who's the star of Santa with Muscles?
You're
going to
get Hulk Hogan. You're going to get interrupted with ads.
Yes.
Multiple times.
It's one of the fast
for that.
It's one of the fast streaming services. What does FAST stand for in this context?
That I do not know.
Free ad-supported streaming television.
That makes sense.
What are some other FAST streaming services?
Pluto TV.
Pluto TV. You could argue that Peacock is. There's you don't have to pay to watch Peacock to an extent.
Crackle.
Crackle. Is it?
Yeah, I believe so. I know it's free and I believe there's ads. Yeah.
Okay. So is there, you actually use Tubi?
I have before. I don't use it on a daily basis, but it's there. It's on my Roku. Roku TV is another one, by the way. But it's on my Roku. And what I do is like, if I'm trying to find like an obscure movie or television show, I'll go to justwatch.com. You type it in and sometimes Tubi TV is the only thing that holds it. Boom. Click Tubi. There you go.
Is there a live linear stream on Tubi or is it only video on demand?
I believe, last time I checked, I believe it's only on demand, but it may be like a lot of those fast channels where they have like those streams of like the news channels and stuff like that going, but I'm not sure.
Because there's an aspect related to NXT here, that the notion that the show is going to be happening on Tuesday night that we'll get into in a moment. But anyway, yes, Tubi is owned by Fox. Fox acquired it in March 2020 for $440 million, according to this report that we're referencing from The Wrap. and then we have the narrative from the complaint here where MLW starts to explain what it alleges happened between MLW, Tubi and WWE. So Fox, we should point out, let me make clear, I'm sure just about everybody's aware, but there's a relationship. You know, Fox owns Tubi. WWE has a relationship with Fox, as we know, because it's the broadcaster SmackDown. So tell us what MLW alleges here.
All right. Before I do, yes, Tubi does, much like Pluto, have like a bunch of channels like Bloomberg, and there's a Fox Sports channel and whatnot that has live streaming going on. But yeah, so WWE pressures Tubi to terminate its contract with MLW. On July 22nd, 2021, MLW entered into a lucrative deal with Tubi, an ad-supported streaming service owned by Fox, to air MLW programs documented in a license agreement. Under the license agreement, and then we have that blocked up, the license agreement was valid and enforceable in the state of California, where Tubi is headquartered. California is also home to two of the largest national media markets, the Los Angeles and San Francisco Bay Area media markets, which together comprise the largest media market in the United States.
Okay. So there's a lot of talk here about California. This lawsuit, which we haven't pointed out yet, is filed in the Northern District of California. So MLW is attempting to sue WWE in California and to argue that it's justifiable that they're suing them there. First of all, Tubi is headquartered in California. So that's the most obvious reason. But they're also mentioning how important it would be for them to be in these big media markets of LA and San Francisco. What we're going to see is, in all likelihood, first, WWE responds by motioning to dismiss, by saying, you know, that these aren't good allegations. And then they're probably going to motion to change the venue. One lawyer I talked to believes that it's very favorable for MLW to have this this lawsuit litigated in California, because in California, the judges will be more liberal. There may be, it's going to be easier for MLW to argue all the things that it's going to argue here if it's in California. WWE will try to get the case moved to perhaps Delaware, where both WWE and MLW are incorporated. Many major corporations like to be incorporated in Delaware. I think just for business reasons, I think there's favorable regulations there, or lack thereof. They may
banking capital of the United States.
Is that what's happening there?
Yeah.
They could motion even to move it to Connecticut, where of course WWE is headquartered. I think WWE's had a lot of success moving when they've been able to move lawsuits to Connecticut, or even New York, which is where MLW is located. I will expect much litigation over where this lawsuit should be further argued. So, moving on, more on the Tubi story.
So, number 41 here in the suit, the license agreement had a profound impact on MLW's business, greatly increasing the company's valuation, strength, and strengthening of its brand recognition, including among viewers of Fox Television and NFL football, and making the company more attractive to new wrestling talent. Tubi benefited because it would have new modern professional wrestling content on its platform. Number 42, after the license agreement was executed, MLW began preparing two live events, including a Fusion wrestling performance that was set for September 11, 2021. In preparation for the to-be-televised event, MLW rented space at the Nitex Sports Center. The second live event was scheduled to take place in Mexico for an Azteca wrestling performance. Number 43, MLW also took other steps to prepare Tubi programming, including hiring staff for MLW's Azteca Underground series, hiring editors, a public relations agency, and a marketing consultant, signing several new wrestlers, and increasing salaries. MLW also ceased all other talks with other potential partners in mid-July 2021.
And then the rest of the sentence is finished, to our view, with these black bars. What are those about, Chris Gallo?
That has to have been that I do not know, but I'm assuming
Chris some Gallo, other partners. You've been with us for almost a year. This is your first. This is a big moment. This is your first encounter of a redaction. Congratulations. It's explained. There's a separate filing here explaining why they want certain things redacted, because they argue there's trade secrets, the proprietary information that they want to protect. I would guess that they're referring to another non-party media partner that they ceased having negotiations with, that plausibly they would have continued to negotiate with had they not been making a deal with Tubi. Any guesses with what that company might be would be purely speculation on our part, but perhaps DAZN. The other things in here that I think are interesting is this sentence about strengthening its brand recognition on Fox Television and NFL football. Are we to believe that MLW was promised that because it was making a deal with Tubi that on Fox NFL broadcasts, MLW would be promoted somehow. Maybe I find that would be surprising if that was really going to happen. But there's that. And then there's all these descriptions of all the things that they did because they thought they were making a deal with Tubi. They booked the Nitex Sports Center, which is in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, for an event that ended up being canceled. And look, they hired all these people. They spent all this money because they thought they were going to make a deal with Tubi. Things were going to be great. They were, they were going to do this show on September 11th. So moving on into the real drama.
Yeah, here we go. Number 44. In advance of the highly anticipated September 11, 2021 launch date, Tubi and MLW agreed to issue a joint press release on August 10th, 2021 to announce the party's new agreement. Next point here, 45. Prior to Tubi and MLW issuing the joint release, WWE learned about the terms and existence of the license agreement. On or about August 9, 2021, WWE executive Stephanie McMahon spoke with a Tubi executive located in California about the license agreement. Ms. McMahon initially pressured the Tubi executive to deny MLW a time slot that would compete head-to-head with WWE's NXT programs on Tuesday night. But Ms. McMahon ultimately pressured the Tubi executive and other senior executives at Fox to terminate the agreement in its entirety. Tubi's affiliate Fox could lose WWE's business or preferred content if Tubi did not acquiesce to WWE's demand and terminate its agreement with MLW. On August 9, 2021, the night before a planned press release about the Tubi MLW deal, as a result of WWE's pressure and interference, MLW received a letter to terminate the license agreement. Number 46 here, thus, with wanton, reckless disregard of MLW's rights and antitrust laws, WWE intentionally and unlawfully interfered with the performance of the license agreement and procured its termination. WWE purposely directed its communications to Tubi in California in order to disrupt MLW's relationship with Tubi and to cut off MLW's access to and competition in major national media markets. Once again, sorry if I mispronounced a couple words there. Not every day do I read lawsuits.
what words were difficult?
I think I said perpetrating. I might have terminated. Might have said that different.
What line is that in? They're numbered.
It's the last line before number 46. MLW received a letter purporting to terminate.
Okay. So it might be the case. It makes it sound like Stephanie McMahon and WWE purely interfered to mitigate a good deal for its competitor. According to one lawyer who I spoke with, it was suggested that it might be the case, depending on how WWE worded this, that if this happened somewhat like it is alleged to have happened, that maybe WWE went to Tubi and said, hey, we don't want to be associated with this other brand, MLW, because of X, Y, and Z reason. I mean, you can see there was comments that people saw yesterday published in the Toronto Star. This is, of course, related to AEW, not MLW. But I don't know if MLW has been particularly violent to the extent that AEW has. But they could have plausibly, whether they're, compelling reasons or not to you and me, they could cite reasons why they wouldn't want their brand to be associated with another brand of sports entertainment like MLW, besides the fact that they're a competitor, which might be a legal business reason. There's the line in here about deny MLW a time slot that would compete head-to-head with WWE's NXT programs on Tuesday night. How does a program compete head-to-head if it's on Tubi, if Tubi doesn't have a live stream, doesn't have a linear stream? Yeah. I'm not sure what they're talking about there. Maybe it was going to be released on Tuesday, I suppose. I mean, in the case of Roku, which now has archival New Japan content, I believe that's released every Friday. Lord knows if anyone's watching it, but I believe that's released every Friday. So maybe it was the release time. And maybe they were arguing that releasing it on Tuesday night would compete with NXT Maybe that's what they're getting at there. Maybe that was what was being part of what was being raised by Stephanie McMahon to Tubi, if this happened as they describe. This bit where ultimately she just convinced them to kill the deal altogether. It almost makes it sound like, and maybe we'll learn more about what happened or didn't happen as time goes on here, but it almost makes it sound like she spoke with them under the pretext that she was going to try to have them, dissuade them from allowing NLW to compete with NXT on that sort of head to head basis. And then ultimately just sort of, talked them into not doing the deal at all. I know there are, and I don't think we're reading the excerpts that pertain to this today, but I know I've heard others who are explaining this lawsuit to their audiences refer to the notion that WWE threatened to pull SmackDown. That is not explicitly stated, but there is some mention of they would pull important programming or something to that effect. Again, how real is any of this? How much of this happened as it is alleged? It is merely an allegation. But did WWE threaten to pull Fox over an MLW Tubi deal? That would seem extreme. I doubt it happened just like that. But yes, you have something.
Here's a theory. If this is true, like, it's just a theory. Tying back to a prediction I had.
Yes.
Maybe WWE tells Fox that they will not consider Tubi as a potential partner in the next day air rights for Raw and SmackDown and NXT when the Hulu agreement ends. Because as we talked about, that's most likely being negotiated this year.
I suppose. I mean, the reason why I'm skeptical about your prediction, Gull, that the next day rights, which are currently owned by Hulu of Raw, SmackDown, NXT, the reason why I'm skeptical that those will go to Tubi is because I imagine Tubi, I know Tubi, when you look at the Wikipedia page, and who knows what it's referencing, maybe it is referencing an SEC filing, but something like 43 million users. I just feel like Tubi's profile is too low to give WWE the reach that it wants and that it could otherwise get. Merely by staying with Hulu, for example. Amazon Prime is in, most households, I think, are Amazon Prime households. Or even there's an obvious synergy in putting those rights on Peacock as well. Who knows though? There are more reasons than just reach for making a deal, including things like money and payments, but we'll see. We should, to catch everybody up here, we should be seeing an announcement about where those next day rights are going to land sometime this year, I would think. Sometime this year, we should be hearing about that. And I would guess that there's a really good chance that those do not stay with Hulu. So there's the Tubi allegations. And like everything else that we're going to talk about here, yes, what?
Real quick before we move forward, we do have a couple super chats, but one that ties into this. Rapsar asked, is there an agreement in WWE's deal with Fox that does not allow any Fox media property to engage with another wrestling promotion? So maybe somebody missed that and they're like, hey, we have this agreement here.
It's possible. We don't know. And then maybe that's something that will be pointed to in whatever WWE's response is. One of the interesting things that could unfold here, and I would think there's a pretty good chance that WWE's not going to settle this easily, unless MLW does have a great case. We might see a lot of discovery. Discovery is these parties bringing forth evidence and documents that will become public, and you've got people like me just waiting for that stuff to come out and talk about it. It's plausible that maybe the Fox agreement comes forward. We've never seen any of these big TV rights contracts public before. Maybe that's something that we see. It's possible that's part of it. We shall see.
And then this is a general super chat question from RT Machine earlier in the chat. He asked, what did you guys watch back in the Monday Night Wars, Raw or Nitro? I was Nitro until about 99, and then I moved to Raw.
I think I was mostly Raw. I mean, I definitely did watch quite a bit of Nitro too. But it was clear at a certain point that, WF was having the more interesting show, and WCW was sort of a wandering, meandering, creative, dysfunction. But But yeah, it was, I watched them both, I would say. I wasn't really into it until about 98 or so. I do remember like watching in 97, Bret Hart getting booed as a heel and being really upset about that. Why are people booing Bret Hart? But anyway, thank you for the super chats.
All right. We'll move on here.
And just real quick. So what I'm alluding to a moment ago about, maybe we'll see some things come out here in Discovery. MLW doesn't have any evidence here yet. Not that they need to file this complaint, but if this gets to Discovery, what evidence is there to back any of these allegations up? Are there emails that will be subpoenaed that MLW will be able to get to be included as part of this case? Are there emails between, let's say, WWE and Tubi or Fox that harm WWE's defense? That's the big question. They will need evidence, and we'll see how far it gets.
Spring, is that you? Warmer temps mean new Allbirds styles. Meet the new Superlight Collection, the lightest ever shoes from Allbirds, now in fresh colors. These must-have travel shoes have a lighter-than-air feel and barely-there fit that made them the most packable shoes ever. Plus, they're comfy right out of the box. That means more comfort and less baggage. Experience how Allbirds is redefining comfort. Visit Allbirds.com and use code SUPER24 for a free pair of socks with a purchase of $48 or more. That's Allbirds.com, code SUPER24.
And I wanted to point out too, so I went to Social Blade. Social Blade is this website where you can see a lot of social media analytics. What Social Blade is doing basically is it's going every day to the about page on everybody's YouTube page and counting the number of video views. So if you delete videos, those are subtracted from your video view count that's on your about page. So it will appear as if you have negative views on a day that you deleted a lot of videos. So that's what we have here for MLW, where they went through a number of dates here where they have negative video views and where they have, super abnormally positive video views, which means they probably re-added some videos that were previously made private or, I shouldn't be saying deleted, but they were probably made private or unlisted. And I imagine that I'm just guessing here, that they were removing at least some content from YouTube, from public access on YouTube, because they were making some sort of media deal that was contingent on that. So what we see is in March. So this deal is said to have been made in July. We have the exact date here back here. Tubi on July 22nd, Tubi and MLW entered into an agreement. So July 22nd. And I don't know that any of this really lines up with that. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see the line chart, and I've called out various states where the spikes are really high or really low. So maybe in advance of that deal being made in July, they did remove something like 4.5 million video views worth of content on May 16th. Then they removed another million in June on June 10th. They re-added almost a million a few weeks later. They removed another 1.5 million on August 3rd, just before this drama with Stephanie is alleged to have happened on August 9th, on or about August 9th. And then September 6th, perhaps after, the 2B deal is now out of reach, it was alleged to have been terminated on August 10th. And then September 6th, they re-add 6 million video views worth of content. But then sort of recently, it's about 2 months ago, on November 14th, they removed another 8 million video views. So I don't know. These are just clues about what might be happening in the world of WWE or of MLW media deals. Maybe they've removed content again to try to appease a potential business partner. But who knows? We move on to Vice.
Yes. And continuing to go through this lawsuit, number 61, as alleged herein, in the spring of 2021, MLW announced that it had an agreement with Vice for the airing of older MLW programs on Vice platforms. At the same time, MLW was negotiating a media rights deal with Vice that would have resulted in an array of MLW programs airing on Vice platforms. Next point, 62, in June 2021, after WWE learned about the growing relationship between Vice and MLW, WWE executive Levinson warned a Vice executive to stop airing MLW programs, saying that Vince McMahon was pissed that Vice was airing MLW content. At the time, WWE knew that Vice needed continue acquiescence, if not cooperation from WWE for purposes of ongoing coverage of professional wrestling, and that this gave WWE leverage in discussions with Vice. And the next point here, 63, the Vice executive responded to Levison, "I think that's illegal what you're doing, and that is probably an antitrust violation." Levison responded that she could not control McMahon.
Yes, this is the word you're searching for there. This doesn't sound like Vince McMahon at all. So this is clearly preposterous, right?
I wonder how many times the word pissed has been used in a lawsuit.
Oh, plenty of times, I'm sure. It's quote unquote pissed. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure people have been quoted as being pissed a lot. Okay, so I've underlined here on the slide in June 2021, because in June 2021, on May 26th, I reported that Susan Levinson was laid off from WWE. I mean, maybe their timeline is not exactly correct here, or maybe she was just in June finishing up her duties. I don't know. Susan Levinson who we're referring to here, was the head of WWE Studios and a senior vice president for WWE. WWE Studios is in LA, that office. This was, so she was laid off as part of the consolidation of the TV department and the Advanced Media Group and WWE Studios. So they felt like they just had redundancy across these three departments that they didn't need. So a lot of people were laid off, some 60 or more, I reported at the time. So who knows what's happening here? Maybe was this really in June? Was this in May? And it's not exactly correct on the timing. I don't know. But anyway, so what, you go ahead and read this last paragraph, Cole.
Okay, here. You're talking about number 64 in the suit, correct?
Correct.
As a result of WWE's threats to Vice, Vice stopped engaging in discussions with MLW about an expanded media rights deal. While Vice subsequently aired one MLW program in the fall of 2021, thus was far smaller than the broad media rights deal the parties had been discussing before WWE's interference. The media rights deal would have resulted in expanded profits and marketing opportunities for MLW.
Yes. So in the case of Vice, what's also mentioned in this suit, I did not include in the slides, is that, so what leverage, why would somebody from WWE be calling Vice and telling them not to make a deal with MLW, as is alleged? WWE has no relationship with Vice, right?
I mean, not that I know of. I don't think WWE would probably be a fan of Dark Side of the Ring that airs on Vice.
But they did allow
Jerry McDivitt. Yes.
They did allow, where is our friend here? There he is. They did allow Jerry McDivitt to participate in that episode about the steroid trial. Jerry McDivitt, I think, was the star of any of the episodes I saw, which are not many of them. But I thought that was an awesome episode. But anyway, I think Bruce Prichard has participated in these episodes too. Is that correct?
Pre-WWE.
Pre-WWE. Okay, well, so what's alleged in this complaint? And it is true that A&E, the network A&E, company A&E, owns 20% of Vice. Apparently Vice used to be this like History Channel 2 or something like that. Does that sound right? You would know something like that, I think.
I believe so.
So A&E owns a stake in Vice. And in this complaint as well, it is said that A&E owns a majority stake of Vice's production operation, whatever that means. On a cursory Google search, I couldn't find evidence of that. But maybe that's true. So A&E, does WWE have any relationship with A&E?
Yeah, recent agreement for two programs, the biographies and the treasures.
Right. So, and we don't know if we're going to get like another season of biographies or hidden treasures or whatever, but there was at least that relationship in 2021. So, you know, maybe there is leverage there because of the ownership that A&E has in Vice and supposedly Vice's production operation. Suffice to say, though, that the allegations, you know, if there's evidence to back it up, if there's good evidence to back up that the 2B story happened the way that it did, I think that's the heart of the case. And these other allegations, I don't know. I'm not so sure about. We could also point to, and maybe McDivitt will, and I think he already has in a comment that was made to the Observer. I think it was made to the Observer. I'm not sure sometimes when the Observer is quoting people originally and when they're referencing. But you could look at, well, maybe Vice had legitimate business reasons to not continue its relationship with MLW. MLW had a Fightland special. So MLW had, in May, reruns, approximately 5 weeks of reruns on MLW. I don't have ratings data for that. But they did have those. That was old content, old episodes of Fusion. Then in October, after this alleged should have happened, by the way. But after October, it was just one occasion. They did a one-hour special called Fightland on a Thursday night, following an episode of Dark Side of the Ring. We reported at the time it had 40,000 viewers at 10, so late, where you expect viewership to be lower than it was earlier. Dark Side that night, with the Bruiser Bedlam episode, had 137,000 viewers. MLW Fightland followed it with 40,000. So, McDivitt will point out later, it did not maintain half the audience, for what that's worth. But what I think is more noteworthy is that the four-week, what did I write here? Without a history of data on Vice, it's hard to evaluate the MLW numbers. However, in the last 4 weeks, on Thursday at 10 p.m., the average total viewership on Vice, again at 10 o'clock in that time slot, 4 weeks before Fightland aired, the average viewership was 63,000 and 29,000 in the demo. Okay, 63,000 total, 29,000 in the demo. Fightland did 40, not 63, but 40,000. Okay, but maybe in the demo did better? Well, no. The 4 weeks prior to Fightland in that time slot did 29,000. 29,000. Fightland did 16. So it wasn't like this did great ratings. Now, this is a small volume. This is a program that did smaller viewership, both in the case of the Fightland airing and in the case of whatever was on Vice before. And maybe there's inaccuracies in the Nielsen measurement because the sample is so small, because we're talking about a program that does not have very high viewership under 100,000. It gets pretty blurry, I think. But nonetheless, it's not like it obviously did a better than usual rating for Vice in this time slot. I would expect this to be raised by one Jerry McDivitt in his response. But moving on to Fight.
Yeah, we'll move on to Fight here. And number 37 in the lawsuit, in paragraph 37, around the same time, Fight, a streaming service focused on combat sports, approached MLW with a media rights offer that would have paid MLW for providing wrestling programs to Fight. MLW immediately agreed to discuss the terms of the deal, but Fight then abandoned it. MLW later learned that Fight's executive advisor of corporate development, Greg Bernard, was at the same time working for WWE as senior vice president of strategy and operations, along with Fight's past use of WWE content and WWE's ongoing attempts to disrupt MLW opportunities, further illustrates WWE's dominance and unfair competition in the market.
Yes. It doesn't say that. So this is alleging that senior vice president of strategy and operations at the time, Greg Bernard, who's no longer with WWE, by the way, as of, I believe, June, according to his LinkedIn profile, he was, according to this, also working as the executive advisor of corporate development. It just leads one to infer, I guess, that there was some sort of interference there, that, you know, that because he was an employee of WWE and also working in some capacity, apparently, supposedly, for Fight, that maybe someone pressured Fight to not make a deal with MLW. But there's no evidence of that at this point. Maybe there will be later. According to this, it further illustrates WWE's dominance of unfair competition in the market. Okay. So again, the heart of this complaint is the 2B story. And all this other stuff is sort of, you know, they're throw everything in there. And get all your grievances in there, and we'll see what works.
Yeah, I think one thing too that McDivitt will argue for this Fight point is the amount of wrestling content that Fight does broadcast that you could consider competition to WWE. They air AEW's international pay-per-views, like, so not domestically but globally. They aired Game Changer Wrestling, among others.
AEW Plus, they aired Dynamite and Rampage, right?
Yeah.
International.
Yeah, so, you know, they air multiple wrestling programs through a ton of promotions on the independent level in AEW. So, like, I think this might be the most far-fetched point.
But it's not as if all of these points have to be winners, I suppose. Only maybe some or one of them does. Anyway, let's talk about the Sherman Act. You're an AP history student. Tell us about it.
Yes, the Sherman Act, which was it came because of Rockefeller and other major business moguls basically gobbling up all their competitors and dominating the markets. But yeah, Section 2 of the Sherman Act, at its core, Section 2 makes it illegal to acquire or maintain monopoly power through improper means. The longstanding requirement for monopolization is both, one, the possession of monopoly power in the relevant market, and two, the willful acquisition or maintenance of that power is distinguished from growth or development as a consequence of a superior product, business acumen, or historic accident. Mm-hmm.
So That's part of the lawsuit here. And what MLW is asking for is for it to be declared that W has violated Section 2 of the Sherman Act. It has used its monopoly power to harm competitors. The relevant market here is obviously the pro wrestling industry. I think what we will see, we'll see McDivitt try to undermine that. I wonder if we'll see Jerry McDivitt talk about how great a competitor. Well, meanwhile, on one hand, we've got executives downplaying the degree to which AEW is a competitor. I wonder if we'll see Jerry McDivitt talk about what a strong competitor AEW is and how AEW and WWE are in the same business, in the same industry. Would it be easier to make an argument like this, that WWE has market power, has monopoly power, if we were talking about this in 2018? In 2022, yeah, this will be harder to argue when, as this lawsuit notes, the 1849 viewership, for example, between WWE and AEW's, this past week, WWE and AEW had the same demo rating in 1849. Dynamite was 2,000 viewers off of Raw in 1849 this week. So, yes, we will, like all these other things, we'll see how this unfolds.
Let me ask you this, though, for McDivitt. Is the better argument that, hey, we're not in the professional wrestling business, we're a sports entertainment company, or, hey, we're not a monopoly, we have all this great competition?
I don't think they can deny that they're in the wrestling business, or because they're going to want to say, things like, hey, look, all these other companies, AEW made a media deal, why can't you? There's all these other wrestling companies that are on Fight, why can't you be on Fight? Maybe we could have interfered with Dark Side of the Ring, but Jerry McDivitt cooperated. I think to undermine MLW's argument, they sort of have to acknowledge that there are other wrestling players in the world and they are similar to those players in some way.
Okay. All right. So we'll move on to more paragraphs here. Paragraph number 69, WWE's predatory efforts to prevent MLW from broadcasting its licensing programs on media platforms such as Vice TV and Tubi were done with specific intent to attempt to monopolize the relevant market in violation of Section 2 of the Sherman Antitrust Act. Number 70, WWE is the dominant competitor in the market. WWE's dominance and high barriers to entry in the market and give it ability to control prices and exclude competition in the market. And number 71, WWE's unfair business practices include, among other things, cutting off competitors' access to viewers and licensing opportunities, interfering with contracts, poaching talent, eliminating price competition, and misappropriating and attempting to misappropriate confidential information of its competitors. As a result of WWE's anti-competitive conduct, WWE has unlawfully restrained and undermined competition, thus maintaining and building its dominance of the relevant market, and threatens a dangerous probability of success at monopolizing the relevant market.
Mm-hmm. They've almost won the monopoly board game. I should have had you read this first before we discuss the Sherman Act. Is there a motorcycle parade happening outside your house right now?
I was wondering if you could hear that. I'm pretty sure my wife is making smoothies. I'm so sorry.
Okay. That's fine. Yeah, I don't know if the listeners can hear it, but I can hear it. Let's move on to the next slide where we talk about the alleged poaching that W is doing of talent, of MLW's fighters, as they call them.
Yeah, paragraph 79, as described herein, the WWE has a history of attempting to unfairly compete against MLW. In 2020, WWE attempted to poach MLW's talent and aired footage of one of MLW's fighters without authorization or consent. WWE has also attempted to induce MLW's wrestlers to breach their contracts and reveal confidential and proprietary information about MLW's business.
Yes. So I don't know what fighters they're referring to. Can you think of any fighters who have left MLW recently and have gone to WWE?
I cannot. Hmm. I mean, man, maybe I'm missing something. Like, I mean, I know some that have gone to AEW, but
did Harry Smith go? He was working for MLW and then WWE.
That would be the only one I could think of.
But who knows? So that's everything from the complaint itself that we're going to talk about. Again, this complaint came out this past Tuesday night. MLW had a press release ready to go because I think this is not just a lawsuit. Certainly it is a lawsuit, but it is also, I think, a branding opportunity for MLW. So, we have a press release that went out Tuesday night with quotes, basically a really brief summary of the lawsuit, and then a quote from MLW's CEO, Court Bauer.
WWE has been wrongfully depriving its competitors of critical opportunities for many years, but its latest conduct has been even more unconscionable, said MLW CEO Court Bauer. I think we speak for the rest of the professional wrestling world when we say that this anti-competitive behavior has to stop.
Yes. So there's that. And then we've got, in The Observer, I think original quotes from Jerry McDivitt.
I have not seen the full lawsuit since WWE has not been served, said Jerry McDivitt the day after the story broke. If Tubi breached, then sue Tubi. As device, WWE has no commercial relationship with them or for that matter, any other dozens of content distribution entities MLW could deal with if they had a commercially viable product. They put a show on Vice. If my memory serves me correctly, after one of those dark side shows and lost most of the audience, I think I read they got 40,000 viewers. No wonder Vice did no further deal.
Yes. So the complaint alleges that the Levitson call happened in June. The 40,000 viewers Fightland special is in October. I'm sure there will be debate about that. But yeah, I'm looking forward to the responses here. I think MLW is definitely treating this as a branding opportunity, though, to sort of rally wrestling fans, many of whom have negative feelings about WWE. As I've demonstrated a number of times, the popularity of WWE has diminished over the last 5 years or so. I think that is a fair statement. It's a statement that's an argument that I've made a number of times with data. So there's diminishing popularity of WWE. There is a lot of wrestling fan sentiment of dissatisfaction with WWE. I think without that, you don't have an AEW, by the way. So I think MLW is using this as an opportunity to brand itself as this kind of anti-WWE alternative. So they had the press release ready to go. So who is defending MLW? We know we don't know this for sure. It's probably gonna be Jerry McDivitt from K&L Gates. By the way, as I used to think, Jerry McDivitt is not. I don't think he has ever been a WWE employee. He's merely the attorney of choice. He works for K&L Gates, but he has always been he's often been the lawyer who defends WWE in its various lawsuits. So who's defending, or who's I'm not defending? Who's representing? MLW here. Well, this is being litigated in California, so we need a California lawyer. And then who's signing this complaint is Jason S. Takanuchi from Kasowitz Benson Torres. And also signing this complaint is Mark E. Kasowitz with Pro Hack Vice forthcoming. This means he's probably not a certified lawyer in California, but he's applying for Pro Hack Vice, which will allow him to temporarily, I believe, practice law in California, as well as Christine A. Montenegro, who, judging by her promo photo, is one of the scariest people I've ever seen. Many intimidating lawyers here for Kaswitz, Benson, Torres. Who is Mark Kaswitz? Are you familiar with this person? Chris Cole, do you have acquaintances or familiar with
Yeah, I have acquaintances that are familiar with him. He has defended the former president of the United States, Donald Trump.
He has. He has been a longtime legal representative of Donald J. Trump Jr., right? He has defended Trump in bankruptcy, in divorce, in Russia collusion. I mean, everybody's gone through bankruptcy, divorce, and Russia collusion. So, those three things. He resigned as Trump's lawyer in the Russia collusion case in July 2017, shortly after there were I don't know if that this was cause and effect here, but it coincided with the timing of threatening emails from him being published by ProPublica, where he's using profanities and so forth. So he has some issues, apparently. But Kaswitz is a big Republican donor and Trump donor. We can see his FEC record from the last several years, where he's donating to Trump victory and to the Republican National Committee and to Tim Scott, who's a Republican senator. So he's a big political contributor, including to Trump and Republican causes. Do we know anyone else in the world who comes to mind in Russell Knox conversations who is a big Trump supporter, organizer, contributor to Republican causes? Anyone come to mind here?
That would be one Linda McMahon.
Oh, Linda McMahon, who served in the cabinet for Donald Trump in the first half of his presidency as the small business administrator. I've got the memorable picture of Vince and Linda and Donald in the White House, in the Oval Office. But nonetheless, Kaswitz, who's been a Trump associate, is suing WWE. I mean, Linda's not. I mean, Linda has no employment with WWE anymore. She still does own over 500,000 shares in WWE, which is, and she does have Class B shares, so she has some voting control. Of course, Vince has the vast majority of that voting control, so like 80%. But Linda owns a lot of stock in WWE. She's behind Stephanie in terms of the number of shares, but she's, other than financial institutions, she's probably the number three holder of shares. Well, for what this is worth, I don't know. But what's been happening with Kaswitz lately? Well, you can see in the Washington Post in September, Kaswitz was serving as an attorney for Trump in a defamation suit related to Mary Trump, but he dropped out. Reasons the Washington Post did not know why. And this is a story about Trump getting a new lawyer in the case. And then in December, there is this story about another billionaire named Isaac Perlmutter. His wife, Laura Perlmutter, is suing the Kaswitz firm, Kaswitz Benson Torres, for what she called frivolous claims made against the couple in their decade-long spat with a neighbor in a swanky Florida condominium complex. So we have one billionaire's wife, Laura Perlmutter, suing the Kaswitz firm. We have Kaswitz dropping out of a Trump case for what reason? Who knows? Could be innocuous. Is there trouble afoot here? There's also, what is this story about this Canadian businessman? So who is Isaac Perlmutter? He is the head of Walt Disney's Marvel unit. The Kaswitz firm spent years unsuccessfully trying to prove, according to this article from Bloomberg, unsuccessfully trying to prove Laura Perlmutter and her husband, Isaac, used a hate mail campaign to tarnish the reputation of millionaire Canadian businessman Harold Peeringboom, if that's how you pronounce it, his name, in a feud over tennis courts. So is there trouble in Trump world that maybe there's some sort of rift here, maybe between Kaswitz and ultimately Linda? There's no evidence of that, but one could speculate. But who knows? What we've got here is MLW, which is not a huge company. It does have investors, which we'll talk about. But MLW, which is not a huge company, has a lawyer in Mark Kasowitz and his firm. Who knows if it's Kasowitz himself who will be writing the arguments. But there's certainly two other attorneys who are signing this complaint, Jason Takanucci and Christine Montenegro. So one would think that the services of Kasowitz Benson Torres are very expensive if they're being used by people like Donald Trump. We also have not mentioned yet that Kasowitz has defended Bill O'Reilly through his sexual harassment allegations. So either Kasowitz is taking this on contingency, which means MLW is not paying very much up front, and the Kasowitz firm will collect what monetary gains they make if there is a judgment in their favor. Or maybe MLW is just paying for it. I don't know whether, you know, it sounds like this would be really expensive for a company of their scale, though, to have their services. At a minimum, though, this Kasowitz firm, which is a very high-profile law firm, probably believes that there's a strong case here on MLW's side. Maybe, too, Kasowitz is noticing that in October, W made a settlement with the class action lawsuit that is related to the Saudi Arabia MENA TV rights deal. W settled in that case to the tune of $3.65 million with shareholders. So basically, if you were a shareholder between a certain period, the class period, you are entitled to a certain amount of money per share that you held during that period. W is not actually paying anything directly because of the settlement, but their insurance is going to cover it. The reason why you try to avoid settling is because it sends a message that if you come and sue us, we might settle. Maybe the lawyers are smelling blood here. W has shown that they're willing to settle. The reason why they settled could be, in this case, in the MENA TV rights deal. By the way, it's just to back up and explain what we're talking about here, the MENA TV rights deal. In the Barrios era, a couple of years ago, WWE missed its financial guidance. Basically, they told investors that, hey, we're gonna hit a certain amount of profitability for the year. They ended up missing on that because that was contingent on their ability to complete a Middle East North Africa TV deal. That TV deal did not get completed. Still to this day has not been completed. WWE was in negotiation with MBC, Middle East Broadcasting Company, I believe is what that stands for, which is a company that, as a result of the Riyadh shakedown, shortly after Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman came to power, the Saudi government owns the majority of that company. However, there's a company not called Quibi. I forget what it's called. Be Out Q, something like that, that is pirating W content, which is, I believe, funded by the Qatari government, and they're sort of trolling the Saudi government by allowing this Be Out Q to be out there and pirating various content. So anyway, the incentive for MBC to make a favorable deal with WWE is not high, considering it sounds like you can get access to this pirated content already in the region. So WWE never made a deal here with MBC or any other Middle East North Africa TV partner. Now, they could have fought this case harder, this class action lawsuit. So and this class action lawsuit was filed because the argument is that shareholders were misled about profitability when they should have, you know, they were misled and they should have had more information disclosed to them. So WWE settled, probably rather than let this case go to discovery where there would be sensitive documents related to the relationship between WWE and Saudi Arabia would be disclosed. The complaint alleges all sorts of things about everything from the talent being stranded in Riyadh. That story in October 2019, I believe, is that was not February 2020, right? That was October 2019. There's allegations in that lawsuit that there was some sort of disagreement between Vince McMahon and Mohammed bin Salman. You know, that would have had to been backed up by evidence, and that would have had to go through discovery. And who knows if there's any truth to that or not. But WWE did not want to allow documents or other evidence related to that case to be publicized. So rather than do that, let's let our insurers pay just over $3.5 million. So after that happens, maybe Caswitz smells blood. Is there a Trump connection here? Is there a Linda connection here or a rift with Linda? I don't know. But who owns MLW? This is an old article that's almost 4 years old now, but a 2018 article in the Albany Business Review on bizjournals.com. It does a profile on MLW, and it refers to seven investors at that time who at that time had invested roughly $1 million. And those investors included Kevin O'Connor, who was named as the former CEO of First Light Fiber, Hermes Ames, the former president and CEO of Upstate New York region of Fleet National Bank, a then 21-year-old investor named Christian Fontenot, and others who Kurt Bauer met through Bobby Hennes, who was a producer, maybe still is, I don't know, for MLW, who is the son of Bob Hennes. Apologies if I'm not pronouncing these names correctly, who is the partner and managing director of an investment advisory company called Hugh Johnson Advisors in Albany. Bob also served at least as the board chairman. He is not an investor, according to the article. And the article says that, quote, the bulk of the financing is still from the Albany region. They're open to accepting more. Also plausible, what I'm getting to here is that also plausible that maybe one of these investors has a connection to Caswitz. And through that connection, Caswitz is representing them in this case. That is also plausible, although not as intriguing, perhaps, as Trump world drama. So I think there's all those things.
Real quick, when it comes to Trump world drama, and this is Wikipedia, so take it for what it's worth. But according to the Caswitz Wikipedia, him and his spouse have donated to the Republican Party and Trump's campaign, but they've also donated to Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Chuck Schumer, and Harry Reid.
Yeah, that appears to be well in the past. This is what we have here on the screen are all of his contributions that show up in the FEC record from late September 2017 and onward, and they all appear to be Republican associated or Trump, for what it's worth. But whatever. I mean, who knows why people donate what money they do, or if they change their political affiliation over time. But yeah, I think that's all the information I have about the MLW suit. If anyone has any questions, if you have any questions or anything, any other lines of thought you want to raise here, go for it.
Just one thing I saw in the chat is a couple of people brought up what the prospective talent could have been, Shane Strickland and Matt Riddle, but they both signed before 2020. And I was doing some research while you were doing that. I can't find anybody from MLW other than Harry Smith that would have signed in the 2020 timeframe. Dude, he wasn't signing a lot of people in 2020.
Part of what's alleged in the complaint too is that they signed people, but it's almost contradictory. They signed people, and they also would not sign people who worked for MLW, you know, to sort of like block them out. Who knows? Anything else for this week?
Nothing else. Nothing else from my end. We are all caught up on super chats too. So
cool. Thank you. Thank you to everyone for your generous super chats. We appreciate that a lot. There weren't any really big stories this week. As I'm scanning my brain, I know we already referred to the Toronto Star story, which I think we've covered it enough by sort of mentioning it in passing. I did the Thursday live TV ratings talk already. If you want to hear about TV ratings for the past week, that is on the WrestleNomics YouTube channel, which you may be listening to us through right now. That is already out there. The audio is out there for patrons as well. Please hit the thumbs up, like, share, and subscribe. That helps people find this YouTube channel. And again, new merchandise, new mugs, new t-shirts. First time there's ever been t-shirts, by the way, for WrestleNomics in its history. There have been mugs. We have some mugs already, but this is big. T-shirts, again, store.postwrestling.com, should be available right now. There's a WrestleNomics channel in the Post Wrestling Discord that you can participate in. We thank Post Wrestling for supporting us and distributing this podcast, as always. And what's new with you, Chris Cole?
You can catch up on all the previous podcasts in RTI Pod. We did a nice deep dive in the NWA between 2007, 2017 recently, as well as the Ring of Honor CZW War. And we're working on our next topic, which will be out later this month. So check us out, RTA Pod on Twitter, Rediscovering Indies on Instagram and Facebook.
And as always, you can subscribe if you're not already subscribed. $5 a month to patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You get my TV ratings reports that come out nearly every day. You get access to the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet. You get access to the audio of the live TV ratings talk. And you can follow us on Twitter at Brandon Thurston, at WrestleNomics, at Chris Gullo, at RTI Pod. And we will talk to everyone next time. Thanks for listening. Bye.